Hi everyone, my name is Harish Kupchandani. I'm the Vice President here at Autodesk Asia Pacific and welcome to Impact Matters. Impact Matters is a thought leadership series dedicated to conversations with senior leaders across the globe and in Asia to help reimagine our future. So resilience has become a buzzword and rightfully so. The global pandemic, climate change, rising inequality, geopolitical headwinds, all have tested or are testing the resilience of businesses, industry ecosystems, and our global community. So what exactly does resilience mean? According to the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, resilience is the ability to anticipate and prepare for change and then adapt to the circumstances in a manner that allows the business to thrive in the long term. So a recent study has shown that 96% of businesses actually believe that business resilience needs to be a core element of their business strategy. Yet 54% of organizations actually have it as a core focus. There are a variety of different reasons for this. Some include complex business models, complex industries that they operate in, and siloed business units. So how can we achieve resilience? There are many facets to achieving resilience, and one area that's become prominent in recent times is the role of the circular economy and the opportunity that it provides to build a resilient future for all of us. We've been championing resilience and sustainability for years and helping our customers with the same as well. However, today, the urgency and importance of the topic are now sharply in focus for all of us. So in this episode of Impact Matters, I welcome our new guest, Lorena Paglia, who's the Regional Customer Experience and Sustainability Lead at Microsoft Asia Pacific. And she brings with her a wealth of experience and will share her perspectives on the importance of the circular economy and its benefits and how we can build a resilient future together. Lorena, welcome to Impact Matters.
Thanks, Harish, and Autodesk, thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you here. You know, we both have a lot in common, but the one thing we have in common is you work for Microsoft, and I used to work for Microsoft as well. I used to be there for 19 years. So tell me, how long have you been with Microsoft in Singapore?
19 years is a great achievement, I have to say. So I've been with Microsoft myself just shy of 3 years as well. So it's also my first introduction in a pure technology environment too, coming from the business consulting background before. Okay. And I've been in Singapore now for coming up to 6 years as
Six years.
So it's definitely home.
So I've read a little bit about your background, and you know, you've done a lot of good work on ESG, and these are very important topics, and they're coming to focus a great deal today, I think more than ever it has been, right? It's no more a buzzword, it's no more a nice to have kind of a conversation. Tell me a little bit about your background, the work you've done, because you've done some pretty amazing stuff from what I read.
Sure, and thank you for your kind words there. I think for me, it's always been about approaching my career from a curiosity point of view.
Okay.
And really what brought me back to, or brought me into sustainability, I should say, is, you know, going back quite a few years ago and working in disruptive transformation. So really working with and being privileged to work with leadership teams and CEOs around what they need to be thinking about to be more resilient and more adaptive when we're dealing with the changing markets. Because the reality is, disruption's new normal. It's just something we need to get very comfortable working with. So how do we get into that space? And so that was the crux of my work, was working with leadership teams in this space. How it led me to sustainability, so this is going well back over 10 years ago before anyone even was calling it ESG, any of these sorts of things, and just saying, when you look at it as a whole system and you look at it as part of risk, you're starting to understand, what does this mean from a risk impact perspective? How does that inform decision making? What does that mean for our strategies? How do we get that visibility across the value chain and supply chain? And looking at it from that perspective, realizing we need to be incorporating sustainability as part of the whole system, because back then it was CSR, or it was occupational health and safety.
That's right.
And then supply chain risk was in a different bucket over on the other part. Yeah, so how do you bring all that pieces together as in an organization so that you can respond appropriately to the external forces that your company will be going through that process?
Nice. So it needs to be a core part of business strategy. It's no longer on the periphery of, you know, an organization and how they think about it, right? From your experience.
Absolutely. And I think that is probably one of the most exciting things about what we're seeing now and the momentum we're seeing in sustainability, because sustainability is a core part of transformation in your business, and it's also a core part of being commercial in what we're facing in markets today.
And as a company, we've been involved in sustainability for a long time. You know, a lot of our technology powers that for a lot of our partners and so on. But the one thing I'm learning as well is this whole concept of resilience, right? We've seen inequality growing around the world. We've seen economic headwinds, geopolitical headwinds taking place, a pandemic, you know, climate change. There's so many things happening around us that's actually testing resilience in ways that we've never seen before. And how we think about building resilient ecosystems, industries, organizations, now comes to the core of for any leader. Tell me a little bit about how you think about resilience, you know, in the process.
Yeah, I mean, so resilience is, as you were just saying, it's all about being adaptable. And we think about our number one job really in right now in this day and age is how do we get ourselves to a foundation so that we're ready for whatever does come our way and that we're able to adapt with that in ease and be a bit more nimble and agile in that space. So that's also for me what I think about in terms of resilience. And if I think about it in terms of a circularity and a circular economy perspective, there's almost three different lenses that you can look through. And but it also speaks to the complexity of the topic as well. So when I think about it in terms of that space, it's you've got design product or product design circularity, so what that means to redesign product to eliminate waste, that then touches on your supply chain circularity and what you need to be thinking about across your value chain for suppliers, making sure you're working with ethical suppliers as well as measuring your scope 1 to 3. There's also then economic resiliency and economic circularity, and we're seeing Singapore government putting a lot of thinking in this space with the Green 2030 plan.
That's right.
And then there's company resilience as well, and looking about it from a company and industry perspective. And if I do use Microsoft as an example, choosing very four key strategies around carbon negative, waste zero, water positive, planetary computer, because it makes sense for that company and that industry in terms of how they can be impactful in this space. But also the other thing I'd say from a resiliency perspective that I've seen a lot of my customers prior to Microsoft really, really struggle with or getting across is you can have the smartest people in the room working on strategy. You can have the best technology in the world, but if you haven't brought your people and your culture with you, it's really, you're really not going to get to the success point that you're looking for.
So I love the fact that you bring up this point on people and culture. All right, it's very easy to talk about the technical aspects of a circular economy, sustainability, resilience. You know, you talk about the technologies you use and processes you put in place, but ultimately people and culture play a part.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about the circular economy in the beginning earlier and how circularity is potentially the path to resilience. Can you share a little bit more about your thoughts on that?
So when I look at what the ASEAN economies and governments around the world are doing, they're getting ready for, they're setting up their economic systems to be ready for this change and to be ready for this adaptability. And what that means is, for example, you look at the three main anchor points, which is green finance. So what needs to happen in changing behaviors in the finance way or the way that we look at investment for sustainability? And so that's everything from enabling carbon development all the way through to how do we need to transition industries? And that's a big behavioral change that needs to take place in terms of how do we look at our investments for sustainability. So that's one element of it too. The other part about that as well is you then have the carbon development that needs to come out of this. So not just for one industry, but mass cross-industry, which then leads into the cross-industry development around energy transition, agri-tech, smart cities, built environments, these sorts of elements that we're looking at. And then they're all set up by market levers, which is then, of course, the scaling technology, that built technology that makes it scale, sharing of IP, and collaboration there, and economic inclusivity. So when you look at it from these kinds of mechanisms, that's a huge change in the economy behavior, and we're only at really the beginning of that. And that in itself is circularity. It's building that circularity and resilience for how, as industry and commercial, we're going to be able to collaborate with government communities in this space. So that's one element of it too, definitely.
That's a massive...
It's huge.
It's huge. It's a massive element, right? It's a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, when I think about APAC and I think about regions like ASEAN, sub-regions like ASEAN within the APAC, 625 million people in ASEAN. And when you think about India, you know, more than 1 billion people in India. You look at China in APAC, again, another over more than 1 billion, 1.3, 1.4 billion people yeah. in China. One of the fastest growing middle class is in Asia Pacific. You know, between India and China, I think they account for maybe 80% of the number of people coming into the middle class. So as a result, demand for things like housing and roads and hospitals and infrastructure and better transport, all of that will continue to grow in the APAC region. And I think the APAC region, if I'm not mistaken, is actually behind the targets that's been set for them for the sustainability development yeah. goals. So do you think there's enough being done by governments, given what you've just outlined? Do you think there's enough being done by governments to drive towards building resilience in economies?
Yeah, so I mean, if we look at it first from the opportunity, just thinking about everything you just said there, and if we look just even in ASEAN, it's a $1 trillion opportunity alone just for this small pocket within the region. In terms of can more be done, is enough being done, I think the reality is there's always going to be more to do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what point that we get in. In terms of are we behind in our targets, we definitely are. I think it's in terms of considering, the reality is we're still going to have an impact. Whether you're looking at Asia, whether you're looking at Europe, there's going to be an impact that we can't reverse at this point. What is really important is then how we catalyze and move forward in this space now. What I think is the amazing opportunity that we do have in this region, that I'm seeing a lot more movement and momentum towards that I've never seen before, is the fact that exactly what you're saying, we have the population, we have that diversity of thinking, we've got all the innovations and R&D centres that are being set up here. So even if we are behind, we really do have that opportunity to be able to leapfrog and accelerate in a way that perhaps other nations haven't had or other regions haven't had. And I say that because, you know, talking about how long I've been working in this industry for, over 10 years ago, I'd be working with sometimes government, sometimes businesses that would have the vision, but we didn't have the technology that we have available now that allows it to really be realized and come to life. And that truly is the opportunity that I think we have in front of us.
I love it. And I love the fact that, you know, you bring in the technology slant, because I think that's a key enabler. It's not the solution, though. It's a key enabler, right? To ultimately what companies or economies or governments want to do. But you know, we can talk about strategy, we can talk about plans, and I think there's a lot of intellectual conversations that happen around that. And COP26 was a great example where there's a lot of controversy in COP26, right? The good news is the glass half full view is there's progress being made, right? We're still moving forward. The glass half empty view, it's not enough. It's not fast enough. And you raise an interesting point, because there was a study done that says, I think about 94, 96% of organizations believe resilience is important, but only 54% actually have a sense of how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a small number when you think about the importance of resilience. Why do you think that's the case?
I think there's a couple of things for it as well. I think human nature sometimes dictates, and unfortunately we wait for the burning platform until real change happens. And we did see that happen with COVID to a certain extent too, in terms of the transformation that needed to take place for businesses. But also there's nothing easy about this. I think that's the challenge. It can be complex. Sometimes it does also mean venturing into having discussions that you wouldn't normally be having in this space too. So, and I also get that tension between when you've got business as usual and the enormous amount that comes our way in terms of everyday business, it's being able to make that space to look forward, to look at understanding what do we need to do and think about in this space, but also making space to, or creating that safe environment to be able to get comfortable in that adaptability, or what's going to be required to be adaptable.
You know, I love the fact that you said there's nothing easy about this, and it's not just in doing, but it's also in understanding. And it's also, once you understand, you know you got to bring people along with you.
Yeah.
Right? So how should an organization think about, building resilience? You know, you talked about different types of resilience, right? So where should an organization start, you know, at an organizational level? And how should a leader start at that?
Yeah.
Because change and transformation, as you know, while it's constant, it's hard to do,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of ways to look at it. So if you want to look at it from an ideal state, an ideal world, I always say you need to be starting with your business strategy first and foremost, or looking at the market that you're dealing with and really designing, okay, what do we need to do to reconfigure our strategies? What decisions are we looking at? What's the impact? So really shaping, I guess, the parameters of what you can play in that space. Then, of course, then you enable it with technology, and then you look at it from a business perspective. Having said that, it never works that way. So that's the ideal world.
I like the fact that you're admitting that, you're acknowledging that.
No, I was just explaining the other day, I've been in situations where companies have gone, we did our technology amazing, but we forgot to do everything else. So it's also then coming in and going, right, how do we bring the two together? So there's lots of different ways you can look at it, but or, you know, in terms of how you approach it. But I think what is key is being really clear on the decisions that you need to make. That's number one. And how do you get access to that? Really making sure that you're bringing your employees and your people and your culture on that journey, because it's 100% about, there's always this almost collaboration space that you can do constantly. It does take longer. Mm. It can slow down the process, but it's a really critical part of how you make sure that you bring the two together. But it's definitely making sure that you got alignment from your strategy through to your operations, through to how your people are going to respond, and also making sure that it makes sense on the ground. Because I think the other challenge as well, when you're dealing with large corporations or also large supply chains, is getting that flow of communication as well from say leadership to corp, to operations and back and forth. You need that constant flow of information coming through.
So strategy is one part, but then how does it travel down to the field where it gets to, where it needs to get executed, to the other, right? So do you think enough is being done to hold governments and organizations and leaders accountable towards building resiliency in the organizations and economies, towards building sustainability in their business practices?
There's always going to need to be more. And we're really at the beginning of this journey. Right? What I do see is whether it's governments, whether it's companies, just going through that process of working out what is this, what do we have to do, and how do we move forward. So I think it's still in that early stage. Mm-hmm. In terms of what you're saying about accountability, absolutely essential in what we do.
Yep.
But it's also where the collaboration piece comes in, because the reality is no one person, company or government can do this on their own, and that's also what makes this so challenging. In reality, in terms of what we can be doing more in this space, I think some of the great building blocks are coming together, and we're seeing that through things like the Green 2030 plan that Singapore's doing, as well as a lot of other governments that are doing to build their ecosystems around this. Also, what we're seeing companies, not just Autodesk and Microsoft, but others that are really driving the sustainability strategies and accountabilities in this space. What's important is that we are all demonstrating transparency and accountability in terms of how we're moving forward.
And you know, I love how you framed it, right? At the end of the day, accountability is not beholden on one party, which means people, culture, which means programs, which means grassroots. You've done a lot of work in that space from what I know.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about some of the work that you've done there and how you've worked around the people and culture aspects, help me understand a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so when I think about some of the projects that I've delivered and work that I've done there, honestly, 70% of the time, it's just getting people in the room to have a conversation. Mm. So whatever you're doing, so if you're thinking from a strategy point of view, it's also making sure you're engaging your stakeholders in this process. Mm-hmm. So almost getting into the room, being really clear and transparent about these are the steps that we need to take, and getting everybody involved in that collaborative process. So that's one of the first ways to do it. In terms of grassroots as well, there's a couple of things. It's about building that community, right? So I think when I consider our 2030 goals, the reality is everybody will have a part to play as we progress towards 2030. And we're seeing a lot of that in action right now. And the key part is you don't have to have a sustainability role to be able to have an impact and to be able to progress in this front. So it's building that community so that we We have people that are able to engage and connect with each other, because we've got people who might have really smart ideas, mm-hmm. but they don't have the technical capability. So how do we make sure that we're matching those people together? It's also sharing the right thought leadership so that people can go, oh, I can apply this in my everyday role in this way. Mm-hmm. It's also getting people comfortable to talk about it. So we'll have coaching programs where people could get comfortable talking about sustainability.
Nice.
Whether it's with friends or family or also in the business environment within their own roles. So there's lots of different ways you can think about it, from what you need to do from a strategy stakeholder perspective, mm-hmm. but then also how do you empower people at a grassroots level to make their own decisions applied in a way that makes sense for them. And I find it's just these two parts coming together that's what is able to help.
Nice.
Some of the trajectory.
I like the coaching programs, you know, helping people understand how to have these conversations, right? So, and that obviously helps to kind of rewire a little bit about mental models that
yeah.
people have in how they think about sustainability and how they think about resilience as a result.
So within Microsoft, we've got these sustainability communities that have been established, and like all good companies, we've got massive regions, lots of different cities in there. And what we've intentionally done is set up chapters city by city within Asia, and that's taken a while to grow that. So we launched the chapters about 2 years ago in the region.
Okay.
And this was even before our 2030 goal announcements as well. And as that came to play, the intention is that by 2030, we know that everybody is going to be contributing to our sustainability goals and progress.
Nice.
As well. And it's already starting now, but obviously that's going to scale and get much bigger as we head towards 2030. And so a big part of how we've enabled that is we've set up these different chapters where within the chapters themselves, they focus on what's the impact we can have within our own local community as well. So we've seen great examples of so in India, we have our community that actually got involved in the redevelopment of their campus to make sure that it was a fully recyclable facility and campus and
nice.
A zero waste campus. We also see out in New Zealand, they do some great work using our AI for Earth programs around their coastal nature reserves, and as well in their nature parks, around how do we use the AI to assess and understand the impact that we have on the environment and gather all that data. So it comes down to that decisions we make.
Nice.
But then there's also how do you set that up? So the infrastructure we've set up around that, for another way of explaining that, is we do things like we bring the community together around regular events, regular calls. We also enable it so that we have people connecting no matter where they are located. But another part that comes into that is the upskilling. So what we're also realizing through this space, and I'll honestly say one of the biggest demands of my time as well, is how do you scale and coach and that skilling that's required? So how do we making sure that we've got our sellers ready to have these conversations, making sure that we have people ready to have those connections, whether it's in a personal setting, almost like what you and I are doing right
yeah,
now,
yeah.
all the way through to when you're making that a more formal discussion as well. So just making sure that we've got that skilling, people understand what sustainability is, how it applies to technology, also industry, because it is very industry specific at times. So there's a lot of things that come together to do that.
That's an interesting one, right? And you know, we've done some work on upskilling as well in Autodesk, and there's a lot of work we've done there. One that I'm really, really proud of was, you know, during the pandemic, there were a lot of people, unfortunately, who were displaced from their jobs. Mm. And we ended up partnering with the Singapore Institute of Management and one of the government agencies to provide a platform for the people who were displaced, PMETs who were displaced, to learn new technologies and then help them find jobs after that. And it was highly subscribed, and it really paid dividends in helping these individuals upskill and reskill at the same time, in order for them to land new jobs in areas where I think there were new opportunities enabled by new areas of focus that, you know, the world is seeing, and enabled by the fact that, you know, you needed new skills, like new technology skills.
Yeah.
I think the other aspect of education is helping people understand that the role of technology is also to augment human ingenuity. You know, while repetitive tasks will get automated,
yeah.
by and large, technology will augment, you know, human ingenuity, so that we can design new solutions, we can solve problems in more creative ways, we can be faster and more productive. You know, so and that's what gets me excited about the role of technology in building sustainable future in building resilience in organizations. And I think when you think about digital transformation and you think about digital adoption, whilst there's a lot of literature out there how good it is and how important it is, adoption got accelerated because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
There's so much more that can still be done by organizations in using technology. You know, how do you think about it? How do we get organizations and countries to think about digitization as a core strategy or core enabler for their sustainability and resilience goals?
Yeah, I think you need to look at it as a scale, right? It, almost in terms of what we can be doing in the here and now versus what we can be doing in the long-term future. So if I look almost at in the long-term future, you know, the reality even for carbon development and carbon goals, when we talk about co-innovation, it's all about developing the technology that doesn't yet exist today, right? And then that's number one. There's that broad acknowledgement that we still have a lot more technology that needs to be built, not just in the carbon space, but also in how we're going about our built environments, also how we're redesigning products. So there's a lot more technology that can play in there. And that's where the collaboration piece and that IP sharing and research and development comes into play there. If we come back to the here and now, what we could be doing right now, and coming back to that example that I said before, you know, companies 10 years ago, they'd have the vision, but we didn't have the technology that we have available that can scale. And I think ultimately the core of that is data. It's really being able to have that access to data for leaderships and also for operations so that they can understand exactly what's taking place. They got better visibility, whether it's in their operations or across their supply chains, to understand the risk impacts, to then be able to say, what are the decisions that I need to make and what are the right decisions that I need to make to ensure that we are doing everything that we can in this space. And that data relates to operational challenges, to carbon measurements, all the way through to what we need to be thinking about to redesign our strategy and continuous improvement. So data's one. There's also that enablement, that end-to-end enablement using IoT and also some great technologies available like digital twins that just allow simulations and scenario planning in a way that just definitely was not possible before.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a really good point around data. You know, there are petabytes of data being created every single hour, you know, forget about every single day, every single hour, and how we use data within organizations and governments to be able to make smarter, faster decision making is going to be key. It's going to be central to, I think, how we evolve and the speed at which we go forward. How do we get organizations to build a stronger data culture and use data at the heart of decision making with regards to building resilience and sustainability?
Yeah, I think that almost comes full circle to what we're talking about in resilience before. It's about getting comfortable in that environment. And there is a certain element of getting comfortable with data and understanding what data is. But I think that is the key, is being able to really demonstrate the ways that data is used as a force for good. You know, we see examples of this like through our AI for Earth programs, where we're looking at nature-based solutions and what we can be doing to understand environments there. I mean, that's just one very simple example, but it's about getting comfortable in the space of having access to that data, interacting with that data, but also understanding the scalable impact that it can have. And I think that is actually key for a lot of people as individuals, but also for larger corporations. Mm.
And I know both our companies, in our own different ways, in the industries we serve, are more and more helping build platforms that connect customers' data so that they can take data and translate that into insights and subsequently action. And I think that's going to be core, you know, to help organizations accelerate their digital adoption going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's also where the co-innovation and then also the IP sharing that comes into play, because more and more, like when we're talking about sustainability and we're talking about circularity, it comes, excuse the pun, full circle to how do we bring everybody together in this space? And and that's a really key part. We do need mass collaboration at scale to be successful at this, to have the right accountability that we need across governments and also companies as well in this space.
I like that, mass collaboration at scale.
Yeah.
Right? Very nicely said, but incredibly complex.
It is very complex. If I was going to focus specifically on technology and what it can be doing in terms of circularity, and I mean, there's so many examples that we can lean on, but if I was to focus on circular centres and what we're using here in from a Microsoft perspective, we a big part of what we're aiming to do in scaling, and obviously we need, well not we need, but more people will be on the cloud as we progress on this journey. And part of that is designing circular centres that minimise waste, because when we're dealing with hardware and the kind of equipment that goes into that, it's maximising the lifespan that we get out of that, also taking the resources or materials that are used and repurposing that, reusing where possible, and minimising to the absolute degree possible that waste that comes out of that center. So that's one element of it. And there's also another part around having these centers being fully renewable or running on renewable energy by 2025. So that's a goal that we're tracking towards. But then also there's an element of water and how water comes into that space too, because obviously data centers design or product design, they require a lot of water usage, also the heating. So it's also how do we be more innovative in this space? And I'm using these examples because it's a great example of how technology, through the use of education, through the use of also a little bit of creativity comes into it too, and that mass collaboration is what makes these solutions possible. Because unless you have that space to be able to create that, you'll never really understand the full extent of these solutions that can come into play.
I absolutely love it. And I think, you know, when you think about a circular economy, the ability to build a circular economy starts from designing.
Yeah.
You know, how do you design out waste and pollution, you know, in the things that you build, in the things that you want to create. And it starts there so that we keep reusing, like you said, right, all the materials for that particular product on an ongoing basis, right? And that allows us to save money, build more efficiency, and reduce the impact on the world we live in. But in order to do that, I think it was harder to do that in the past. It's a lot easier to do that now because of technology.
That's
and
right.
The role technology plays in helping to design, in helping to simulate, in using technologies, whether it's, you know, cloud, or it's, you know, building information modeling technologies or digital twins or generative design. But all of these technologies are there to empower all the creators and innovators out there, organizations out there, to look at doing the same things differently, more creatively, in productive ways, so that they can reimagine the world in very different ways going forward, which is what is absolutely needed when you think about you know, the challenges we have ahead of us.
Absolutely. And you know, just to touch on what you were just saying there, what we're dealing with is these are challenges that we have never faced before. And we're looking at them in a completely different way. And so everything is 100% about how do we co-innovate? How do we enable that to take place and allow all these different parties to come together? But most importantly, that empowerment is critical. So whether we're talking about grassroots, we're talking about the use of technology and how we touch on economies, everybody needs to lean in to solve these challenges, and empowerment is absolutely key in that process.
So I love empowerment. I love how technology has democratized the ability to empower every single individual to think differently, to create, to innovate, you know, and to approach the same problem from different lenses. So what advice and what action would you share with everyone, given empowerment's important, but to effect change, it starts with every individual, one individual at a time.
That's
so
right.
What advice and what action would you share with our audience they need to do now?
Yes.
And they need to heed in order for us to create a better future?
At the end of the day, I touched on it earlier, you can have the best strategy, you can have the smartest people in the room, you can have the best technology, but it's about your culture and your people. So start there. Really understand who is most passionate, who wants to lean in, and make sure everybody's coming on that journey with you. I think for me, that's the number one part. No matter what company, industry you play in, your people and your culture are the absolute critical component of this. And also begin. I think that's one of the biggest challenges is I often get asked is, where do I start? Where do I begin? What's going to make more sense? And I think it's just taking that first step. That's the most important part, and being really transparent in that process as well, and putting the mechanisms of accountability around that too. In terms of action, I'm going to get really practical on this one, and I'm going to talk about what I do at home.
Okay.
that's a question I get asked a lot. And just really simplistically, what I do at home myself is I recycle everything, absolutely everything. Is I make sure that I'm bringing in products, I'm making purchasing decisions that are all centered around recyclability of what I can do in my household. Obviously, infrastructure recycling changes depending on nations that you live in, but that for me is absolutely critical. But then from a really strong personal point of view, obviously I've got all this background that I came to Microsoft with. So for me, it's very much about how do I help other people to understand this and to make sense of it? How do I help coach and bring them on this journey so that they're also comfortable to act as an advocate for sustainability and to take their own action?
I love it. Lorena, thank you for joining us at Impact Matters. It's great having you. I've learned a lot, and I look forward to seeing the impact of the work you do and your thought leadership scale across the region in the time ahead.
Thanks so much for having me.
So that was Impact Matters with Lorena Balia. You know, the world we live in is changing, and it's changing really, really quickly. And the change is not something that's going to stop. The pace of change will continue. And how we think about the world ahead of us and our futures, whether it's in individuals, organizations, or as a country, will need to evolve as well. Building resilience becomes a key aspect of what we need to do for ourselves so that we can ride the waves of change more gracefully as we go forward. Ultimately, the impact of what we do matters. And I look forward to reimagining the future together with all of you, our partners, our customers, our communities across the region, as we work together to create the next possible.